outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
So what do you think, babe? Is this our retirement?
I don't think so.
Have we retired?
I don't know. I don't think I have. Have you?
No, I don't think so. Feels weird, though, doesn't it?
What? Not being in a house?
Yeah, not having a home and driving around and meeting with people. And how's it been for you, the meeting with people?
It's been good. I've enjoyed it.
It's different than before, right? How do you notice it doing different?
It's different than before as far as I think I have something to contribute. Whereas before I didn't have any thought of having worth. So that's different.
I love the things you've shared. I love the way you engage people. I hear you talk about God in ways. I've not heard you talk publicly. We've talked that way, but you've never said things about Father's love for you. And
yeah, because I didn't think that I had something that was worth saying or that was...
But you always did. I've always enjoyed the things that you've shared and discovered, but I'm the only one that's gotten in on most of that.
Yeah. You have, but not me.
And we get in a public setting and everybody's staring at me and now they want to hear from you.
Yeah, but I still think my reset for getting energy still comes from a place of being alone and not around in people. I'm not...
Yeah, we've noticed your endurance is longer. I mean, you can be with people longer because you're not, I think it's because you're not having that, I'm a horrible person, someone may discover, so you don't have all that protective stuff going on. At the same time, you hit a wall at times.
Yeah, and I think that's just from, I thought it might, well, I didn't know how it would be after what we've gone through. So I wasn't sure, but my endurance has gotten better and I've enjoyed and appreciate that. But also I need the time and space of being alone to be able to be re-energized.
Which we haven't had enough of on the first part of this trip. That's what we're discovering.
Yeah, not as much. Because when you were on a Zoom call and I was outside with the dogs and... and I was just sitting there, covered up in a blanket, because it was a little on the chilly side, but just listening to the wind and just feeling and watching the sun come through the leaves and just being still and not thinking. And well, there was a couple of new songs that I have heard and was listening to. And so that was just being still and not thinking.
Is it renewing?
Yes.
I bet. Refreshing?
That's good. Refreshing. But it's just not thinking, it's just being, and which is...
I got that yesterday. I got that yesterday driving down here through the beginning edges of fall. Oh, it's so beautiful on the road. And I haven't found driving to be relaxing yet, but it was then. And it was awesome. I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way. And the other voice you hear is my wife, Sarah. And she's joined us today. Willingly, but we're supposed to be with Kyle. Kyle and I recorded an amazing podcast last week when we were in Wyoming. One we aired, and there was another one we did that was incredible, and then somehow the recorder ate it. We cannot find it anywhere, so we've lost it, unfortunately. And then Kyle and I have tried to connect this week to do a Zoom podcast, and they've had a little tragedy going on around their family back home, so we've not been able to connect. So Sarah said, hey, I'll do it today, so just we can have something to share. But I thought it would be interesting because we do have some things to share. I love the discussions we've been over the weekend in Duluth. We had a great time with a whole lot of folks there, and more than ever before, at least more identified than ever before, how many trauma-affected people are part of our gatherings and part of wanting to converse with you or me independently, individually.
But I wonder how many, we are aware of being trauma, but I just wonder maybe the stats out there on people is that there's a lot of trauma around, but not necessarily known or spoken of.
But it's a lot different now because your courageous sharing has opened the space for people to start there. Not maybe we get deep enough someday in a relationship, but people, because you set the tone with your own honest story, that people are ready to come out with their honest stories, which are pretty amazing.
Doesn't feel very courageous.
I know you keep saying that, but my goodness, it is incredibly courageous. Not many people let that stuff out. And I got an email this morning from someone in Australia, just talked about how they will always respect and honor you for the door you opened into their heart by risking the honesty of your own sharing, which I wish I had that email here. I'd read part of it because I don't have it in front of me at the moment. What do you find yourself saying to people? What are the counsel that you kind of find yourself giving more than others?
Just identifying with their pain, not with what they've gone through, because all of us have different journeys and our experiences and what has happened to us is different. But the pain and the feelings that's behind that internally are very similar and I think somewhat universal. And
the feeling of being horrible is, or evil, or horrible, people use different terms, but that's overwhelming feeling that I'm not worthy of love.
And the pain and the maybe mistrust, I'm not sure of, but of what was done to them, and maybe even without them knowing or us knowing, their loss of innocence in a world that was, something was done to them, and the coping skills that they have had to live in order to survive, and the survival mentality, just trying to get through a day, and sometimes it's trying to get through a minute. And so being able to identify with them in that, and it's also when identifying with them that helps to me validates my story. Maybe it helps validate them. And telling them, I'm sorry what they had happened to them and that they didn't deserve this and this wasn't their fault.
Yeah, I've heard you say that often to people.
It's not their fault. And that's what I struggle with, and I know you and I know some others would say it wasn't my fault. I wasn't the person, I didn't deserve that. But it's interesting how all those kind of things come out of things like that that have happened to you. And it doesn't have to necessarily be sexual abuse either, even though I'm finding that that's way too common, way, way too common.
Yeah, we opened up the podcast a couple of weeks ago and said, if you had questions for Sarah, you know, feel free to send them in. And we got a few, not a lot, but one of them was, how do you sort out where God was 64 years ago when he quote unquote let this happen to you? How has your discovery of betrayal by a close relative and hurt, how's that meshed with your perception of God, and where was he 64 years ago when you would have appreciated him intervening?
Interesting. I was listening to a new song out there while you were having Zoom, and was talking about, it was more a song God, where God was talking to, singing to me, and it was talking about how he has always been there through everything. And so I guess at the age 4 and so, I don't know about how I have thought about that. I think maybe when I was 7 or 8, that one was more violent, and then that was where the ray of light was, and then there was a tree as the sunlight was hitting through the same way, and as far as the window out there when I was sitting out there. And I just think because before then I would say I probably wasn't sure, but with having that ray of light that, as I talked about in one of the podcasts, and that one at the age 7 and 8, it helped me to know that he was there. How I try and not go through and think and wrestle through that too much, because I don't know how to process all that.
I think the Ann Voskamp in The Waymaker does a pretty good job of sorting through our expectations that life, and I think I grew up with that, life should be, if you're following God and God loves you and all that stuff, things should go well. And if things are going badly for you, then that obviously means God doesn't love you as much or care about you.
Or you did something.
And that's Job. We've been reading Job, interestingly enough, on this trip, where the advisors are coming to Job and say, hey, if you got stuff going on, obviously you were a bad guy. So then it is your fault. Then it is. And that's, I think, that whole religious rancor around human need and our expectations about what a blessed life would look like. And I think what, for you and I, over the last 30 years, that's really changed. We see the brokenness of the world in a different way. We see that the default mechanism of this creation is brokenness and suffering and pain and hurt. And we were created to survive that suffering, to endure it with Jesus, to let Jesus appear in it. And it'd be nice if God kept all the bad things from happening in the world, but somehow that doesn't fit how God sees his involvement in the chaos of the creation. He's the healer, not necessarily the preventer. I would like him to have stopped every abusive thing that's ever happened to a child. I wish he would stop it today, because it's happening today. And yet God's redemptiveness in the universe is very different than that. It's not, I'm going to stop it. I'm not going to prevent free will. Yes, evil does happen in the world and it penetrates people's hearts. I'm the redeemer in the story. I'm the rescuer. I'm the lover. I can find you in any pain. And what you said about him, he was there. When we wrote that bit on the shack about Missy and Max, like, where were you when Missy was taken? I was with her. I'm in the truck with her and the abductor. I didn't leave her. I've never left you, never left her. And no, that doesn't get the outcome we want. But God's big enough to redeem any situation this world throws at us. And yeah, I think we'd all like God to be the great preventer, but he's not. He's the rescuer.
No. I grew up, I think, partly because Dad had, at the age of my age of 5, Dad was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And so, I mean, it wasn't as bad when he was younger, but, I mean, he had it for 42 years, and And there were different times, you know, they're praying for him and, you know, the whole thing of what did you do? Is there something in his past that, you know, he did to be able to have this disease? And I think for the most part, my dad, I didn't hear him complain or blame God a lot. Maybe he did internally. He was a man of few words. But I think I lived not always expecting a rosy
path. Yeah.
And so, it's not that I didn't struggle and question God. Why did he have that? Now looking back, that mentality in Africa, you can't live with that mentality there. Well, I guess you could. But
lots of places in the world, you couldn't live with the idea that, well, if you're really blessed of God, you won't suffer. You couldn't live in the Ukraine today without knowing God loves. I would love for God to have stopped Putin, for the whole Russian, just to go waste a country for your own greedy grasp at power, whatever. But you know what? We're growing up in a world, we live in a world where evil often has its way. And that's one of the things Job said. He said, when have you ever seen God stop somebody who's evil? And I just went, oh my gosh. He does occasionally. It's incredibly rare, at least now. Jesus, I love 1 Peter 3 in the Message, the very last verse, Jesus will get the last word on everyone and everything. And man, he will. And that will be a great day. But in this life now, he can have the last word in my life about things people have done to me that are hurtful or things that were done to you. One question we had was someone saying, how did the nights resolve for you? Like when you're having a traumatic memory and I'm with you, holding you, whatever. he was wondering if there was some way that God revealed himself to you that allowed you to fall back to sleep. Did something,
no.
or it just...
I mean, I have most of my life been one who doesn't have a hard time sleeping. So I think that's going to, I think these things that determines, you know, because of your tendencies. But for me, generally, I think most of them were in the middle of the night or at night. And then I would remember them and crying and some of them, and then you would be holding me. And I think for the most part, they just went back to sleep. I don't know if there was a resolve, because I think it took me, there was a talking about the memory, and sometimes there was just a piece of it, and then it would come together later. And I think as we're talking and processing through the day, it's not that it was resolved and they were put together and I knew and they fitted together.
Yeah,
after.
It wasn't that quick.
No.
Yeah, it was days of processing it out as well. One of the things I've noticed from our discussions over the last, well, you've been a month now out on this thing.
I don't know.
It's been about a month. We're now in Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, on Lake Tomahawk, or Tomahawk Lake, one of the two, I forget which. Beautiful campsite, man. It's the thing about, there's only one person in the world that knows exactly where we are today, and that's the people we're having dinner with tonight. No one else. I mean, our family, our kids don't know. No one, we're in this little box together.
Our dogs don't. They just are here.
They just get out of the box wherever we are. They go for a walk, and they do whatever, and they're with us, so they're good. But one of the things I've noticed as we've talked to people through this journey is you can try too hard to be healed. You really can. And I know that sounds weird, like, oh my gosh, wait, who wouldn't be desperate? If you've got some trauma in your life, and we've met people that weren't like you. You had amnesia for 64 years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there were trauma evidences underneath that, but you weren't dealing with this horrible memory of something done to you. Like other people we've met happened in their...
And they remember it.
Teens, or they've remembered all their life, and they've begged God for healing, and they know there's not healing there yet. And I'm
not sure which one is worse. Maybe it was a blessing that I didn't know.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, our journeys are so individualized,
yeah.
And I think what we have to know is that God knows the best way to bring us to wholeness. And given what you've endured, I mean, we talked to one young lady who grew up in the worst kind of environment imaginable. And then when she got out at it, then her family turned on her and blamed her. And then the church blamed her because this was an elder who had been raping his daughters. And it just is incredible.
And she just keeps getting traumatized in a different way, but over and over again.
Yeah, now her family traumatizes her because the father ended up committing suicide. So... And blamed it, you know, it was you, if you hadn't exposed it. So you're the problem for saying there's a problem, rather than no, you're the problem for the evil thing you were doing to your daughters. And then instead of getting help, you blew your brains out. So don't blame the daughter for wanting to have healing and wholeness. But we've heard all that. But that, as I talk to people, that white knuckling, I'm trying to get healed. I'm trying, God, what is the peace? What is the peace? I think what my heart's refreshed in is it's not the healing that's most important. It's the presence that's most important. In other words, if I can allow God to draw me into that space of growing trust in his affection, of love, rest, and play that Kyle and I talked about last week, if I can let Jesus draw me into that space, then I can trust him to let the trauma sort out in the best possible way. We never sought out memories for your trauma. We never did. We didn't pray, God, okay, God, reveal this now. And I know there's lots of techniques and workbooks and things where we try to make a process out of healing when instead it's the presence that's most important. It's God's presence with you now, even while you're still wrestling with the trauma, that will open the door into the healing of the trauma. And it's possible to want the trauma to go away and not seek the trauma is the thing, where the healing is what we're seeking and not the presence.
You want the pain. I mean, I get the pain, the panic attacks, the symptoms that come along with the trauma. And I get that and how they are physical to your body and how in living and how you just want to be done with those. But for me, I think, and you can get focused on that. You focus on the pain. But for me, it's a combination. It's the safety that you provided of your love. It's God's gentle hands in bringing it out. But then also there was for me, an inside where my inner child, who knew all those and shut everything down and was really basically...
That part of your brain that still had the memories. That part of your brain was withholding it all because you couldn't handle it.
And was feeling the shame and the guilt of being the horrible person and was holding them. And it just... And talking to that and when I first started connected with my inner child, before I knew of any of my memories, and in this time when I was with my therapist and she was, what's my inner child? Reaching that inner child, she was just laying flat on the ground in a dark room and just hands face down and just sobbing and just, you know, connecting with that, where she's feeling like she was horrible and disappointed people and wasn't a good person. And it was for me to connect with her whenever there was feeling any kind of pain, anxiety, pressure, anything too, for me. And it sounds odd because it's like there's two people, but not yet two people. It's an inner child.
It's just a different part of your brain. They call it inner child because it's kind of what memories were locked in there when you were a little girl.
And
how you treat that now as an adult person, how you talk to that part of your brain.
And my therapist said, just talk to her. Talk to her. Tell her that you love her. Tell her that you're here. Reassure her of the love. Reassure her of your presence. Reassure her of the fact that, this wasn't from my therapist, but for me, that Jesus is there with us, that we are going to be okay, that I'm there to by her side. It's just that talking. That could be, if you have to do that all day long, whenever things come up, it's the talking and reassurance. And I think by her feeling that there was somebody there with her, that I was with her, that we were going to get through this, that we can face this, and I was going to keep it safe for her, that she was okay. And I think that was giving like a permission for things to start being able to come. And I think there's got to be a safety net I'm not a therapist, but for memories to get out and be faced, and you're needing to face them if you're fearful, which they can be, but and be painful because you're experiencing hard things. But if there's a sense of internally that inner child or whatever you're going to be facing, to be able to be reassured of love, security, and a safetiness, I think that's where a focus is helpful, I think, is to get your internal where you are in a place of trusting in the Lord, trusting in with someone else, trusting in yourself that you are going to be okay. For me, it was memories coming that I didn't know.
And some were terrifying.
Yes.
They're very terrifying.
Those who know them and how they get there, that's a different journey.
But still, I think presence more important than healing.
Yes.
If we're just using God to get healing, it's going to make the healing. It's not that God wouldn't be used for that, but God knows what you need is to be soothed and held. And he wants to bring you into that place. And then whatever the trauma needs to do to be healed can happen inside that space. That poem that Dana wrote that I read while you were away, Dana shared with me before I even knew that was going on, and I'll link it at the bottom of this podcast so people can see it again, but it was about holding herself. It was leaving that child on the beach and then realizing that I never could run from that child, and then bringing the child into the boat and holding her, holding me. And that soothing place is, I think, why we've talked about living love. I do think that's why part of your journey, we've been exploring living love for 30 years, and I think it created a space for the trauma to emerge and for you to handle it very differently than you would have if it would have emerged 25 years ago.
And still little things will come up, you know, little feelings and will come up, or coping skills will come up that I've learned and wrestled with. And that's where it's a journey. It's not where there's, okay, you deal with all that and I'm going to be fine and go on, because I think that it's a process and learning how to walk through this life in the midst of all that we have gone through, but it's walking and trusting in Father. And for me, often the songs that are helpful for me, and the image that where I go in my mind to find the safe places, is where I'm crawling, and like a child crawling into the lap of Father and holding and having his arms around me. Mm.
And we're doing that for other people right now, holding space for people's pain. I mean, you just hear these stories. I want to read this email that we got. I think this is the most brilliant conversation I've ever been let in on. And this was a friend I know who wrote me talking about some trauma. And he was listening to our podcast, and he said, "Man, I wish I could have loved my first wife like you loved Sarah. I think things would have been really different." And then he tells me a story where I'm going, "Well, you exactly did." The backstory is he got married after 3 or 4 years. Some trauma emerged in her past, and it kind of turned them on each other. And it was kind of not good. Their relationship was really deteriorating. He was angry at her because her need was pulling him back from the ministry he wanted, kind of thing. And they were so at odds with each other that he even, in his words, had an affair so she would have an excuse to leave me. And in the midst of all of that unfolding, they're driving late one night, and the wife says to this friend of mine, he said, on the trip home, she shared how she would have given the benefit of the doubt to any friend or couple who had almost an identical journey as us, but were calling it quits. And he says, it had to be a God thing, but I immediately asked her. So, her saying I could give the benefit of the doubt is, even though you've cheated on me and even though we've had all these fights and they've been doing it for 6, 7, 8 years, I could give us the benefit of the doubt. And then his question is so brilliant. He said it had to be a God thing, which is, flesh and blood hasn't revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. He said, I immediately asked her, what would it be like for me to give you the benefit of the doubt in our marriage? Those are the acorns plucking down on our box here while we're, that's hilarious. They roll around for a while and fall off. Anyway, he said, what would it be for me to give you the benefit of the doubt in our marriage? And within 1 second, she responded, it would be that you would believe that where I have been, what I have done or not done has never been to hurt you. I've just been trying to survive. I read that to you and Kyle one morning when we were walking in Wyoming, and both of you looked at me and said, how could she have ever put that into words?
I know. I looked at Kyle and I said, I don't even know how she came to that thought in the midst of trauma. And Kyle said basically the same thing. And I remember looking at him and I just, wow.
I think this is a flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, my Father. I think God gave them the moment. Because that, you would say that expresses for you. You, whatever hurts you.
I mean, when I left you and everything I didn't mean.
You weren't trying to hurt me.
I wasn't trying to hurt you.
I believe that.
I was just trying to get through the pain of living every second of every day.
And that's a common refrain we hear with people who have suffered trauma. I'm just trying to survive. Yeah, I know I may be a pain in the neck sometimes. I know I may have done some stupid, irrational, hurtful things, but I wasn't trying to hurt you. I was just trying to survive. That, man, when I read that in this email, and then not only his great question, which brings that great statement, and then he said, I broke down crying while driving, and I said, honey, I have totally been misreading you, especially these past 5 years, and have just added a whole load of weight on to what you have already been trying to carry in your life. I'm so sorry. Can you ever forgive me? And she was weeping by then, and she also said, I don't know how to respond to you, as I never expected to hear those kinds of words come out of your mouth. And I said, honey, that's all they are right now is words, but by God's grace and help, they will become a reality of who I become to you. That was about 9 p.m. as we drove, boys asleep in the back of the pickup, and we talked until 8 the next morning. That was a 180-degree turning point in our marriage. Of course it would be.
Yeah.
Man, if you can crawl into someone's pain and say, okay, it's not personal. I know your pain causes you to do hurtful things. That's true of anybody. Anybody's selfishness. It doesn't have to be trauma. It can be selfishness. It can be arrogance. It can be whatever. It causes pain to other people.
And that's what you did. And you didn't react the way I was told or anticipated or believed you would. And that was a huge shifting point for me trying to figure out in contacting probably Kyle and coming back little bit by little bit.
That was true for my friend and for his wife. He said the next 20 years, they had the most incredible marriage, heart connected, loved. All that had been there before in those intervening 5-6 years. He never ended up, quote unquote, in ministry professionally, but guy's in ministry every day, just the way he loves people. He works with a bunch of folks coming out of prison or rehab in some way in these transitional houses. I mean, the guy's just amazing the way he gives himself away. When he said to me, I wish I could have loved Sarah the way you love Sarah. And I know he means that in the first day, right? But whatever, 5 years, he got to that place of being able to say, I forgive you. I'm not holding any of that against you. I just want to know how I can love you now. And I'm going, and she responded to that. And then 20 years later, she got breast cancer and died, which is, that's why it's his first wife. They ended up being together. And I love the way he talks about her. Such a great marriage. If the benefit of the doubt would mean that where I've been, what I have done or not done has never been to hurt you. I can hardly read the last sentence because I've just been trying to survive. And I think of you in all that we didn't know and all that you were managing by yourself because you didn't feel like you could bring anybody into it. And man, I love where God has taken us. We're in this little box together, man. How's that going?
It's going well. I mean, I'm learning, especially with this. I've seen and learning about myself what I need. Or I mean, just because that trauma is gone, the coping skills, my thought processing, and how I lived and responded and reacted throughout everything, and even now, it doesn't just shift and go away. It's the coping skills were my default, and it still easily slides back into the default and trying to figure out how to. It doesn't change overnight. It's a paradigm shift that takes, I'm finding it's going to take time.
I think that's what a lot of this trip is about, and it's kind of what you wanted. You know, you didn't want to fall back into old patterns, which are very easy to do when you're in the same house, same way. I don't say everybody gets to sell their house and go on an RV trip,
yeah.
But it really has from shopping together or being in the laundromat together or in just ways that I respond and you react in a different way. And because we're together all the time, we can talk about all of that and talk about what you were thinking. And you're bringing up things that you would have never brought up with me before. And now it may take you an hour or two or a day or two to let it come out. But then we get to talk about it. And what's a different way we could handle that, you and me, that would allow us to have more enjoyment and wouldn't trigger old responses? And I've loved this.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's going to take time, and my coping skills and how the trauma affected, I would probably say, almost everything and how I respond. And I just see it like just in when we were in the grocery store, you know, I'm finding that I wish I had said, or I should have said that I wanted to stay.
Don't should on yourself.
Well.
I might have said.
That I wanted to stay in and just, you had gone through the bakery section and I wanted to, and we're getting ready to go. And I was just trying to think why. You asked why, and I just like, I don't know why.
And yeah, she said, don't you want to go in the bakery department? And I said, no, I've already been in. There's nothing I want. And you wanted to go in there for you.
Yes.
But you didn't know how to say that or even just say, well, I haven't seen it yet, or anything that would have given me a clue.
But then I was just been thinking about it this morning. I just say, since we walked in, I'm just like, I wasn't allowed to have wants.
I know.
And it's feels very selfish. And it's something that I don't feel like I have the option to say I want to do that. I want to go in for me.
Of course you do.
But that is a huge thing to be able to say, because I just realized this morning I've never been one to say I want to do that.
And when you say you're not allowed to, it's mostly been something internal, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it's not been it's your parents or even internal. Me, because I've asked you all along, what do you want? What do you want to do?
But it comes from the fact that I'm not allowed to have wants. I just do
what everybody else wants
to do and what I'm told to do.
Yeah.
Which then makes it's selfish if I said I just want it. Because that was not even, until you said that's not even a sentence that I would even think of saying ever.
That's even that old religious thing about joy. Jesus, others, yourselves. It just absolutely fits your trauma of Sarah's wants being somehow selfish or not right, not fair to be asked for. When you're asking for my wants, you're asking for other people's wants because you want to help them or serve them. And it's cruel that that kind of filter inside has kept you from being able to explore that. But I
didn't even think of that.
I know.
Because I didn't think, because I'm not allowed to have wants. I didn't even know that. It was, that makes sense. I want to go there, but then it's a huge thing. It's beyond my comprehension, but now even hearing it would be even a huge thing. And part of it is just expressing a want is being selfish.
You know, if I knew a couple like us, I'd give them the benefit of the doubt. They're going to make it. Yeah. And you're going to grow. And I love the fact that healing, and that's kind of what we've always looked for. You know, the prayer, the fix everything, and life goes on. God's healing is so transformational. So a big thing gets dealt with here. There's all kinds of tentacles of that spread through how you think and how you live. And God gets to unwind those. And your honesty about it and our getting to talk about it opens doors for us to have a very different relationship, which it's all good for me. I know the fawning thing. Everybody, gosh, if I had a wife just fawn over me, that'd be awesome. It's not awesome when you realize it's not coming from wholesomeness and health. It's coming from brokenness. And now I love what God's doing in you. I know people are kind of, we've let them in on the story. And I love how you're responding to him. I love how we're together all the time now. We don't even get to escape each other except if we're on a call or something. But we're just right here. And yet we've had such fun.
Yep.
And now we're going to head down the road and see some other people. We've got some good days right now to catch up the pacing a bit, because it was a little bit too much early on. And there's some other group stuff coming that may kind of push that limit again. But we're going to try and be real careful about how much Sarah can do and how much Sarah can't do, because Sarah needs time to recharge her batteries in the woods.
Yeah, and it's just finding out, and I don't, yeah.
And hopefully we're not going to run ahead of fall here, because where we're parked here, it was changing a whole lot more 100 miles north of here. Yesterday we're driving through. It's just starting here, and we're going to be in Wisconsin a little bit and then down to Upper Peninsula of Michigan. So hoping we won't outrun fall, because, the color, people who know me know, I love spring. I love lilacs in bloom. I love that. There's nothing more. And I thought about this when I was driving yesterday. Why do I love the fall so much? I know for people around here, it's like winter is coming. I grew up in an environment climate where winter was nothing. It was fog and cold. And I look forward to winter. It was never snow and ice and all that you folks deal with up here in the northern part of the country. But that must be why I like fall. Other people see it as a harbinger of death. Winter is coming.
No, I like fall. Fall is pretty.
I love it. So beautiful. The leaves falling, walking the crispness of the air this morning. It's 55 degrees on our walk and beautiful day.
Yes.
So wherever you are today, I'm hoping Jesus is dealing with you. Those of you that have got trauma in your heart, I just want to reiterate to you, seek him more than healing from trauma. Seek his peace, his rest. Find your way there. Don't think the trauma has to move before the relationship grows. The relationship growing will displace the trauma and bring the wisdom and insight and healing you need. And find some people to comfort you along the way. If it's not a spouse, then it's a friend. If it's not a friend, maybe it's a counselor. Find somebody who can walk with you so you're not alone in all of this. And hopefully we'll have Kyle back here next week, or you and I will be in Michigan somewhere doing something crazy.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com or add your voice by calling our comment line at 805-539-6980.